You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to the Faith Unpacked podcast with Jason and Jamie. This is episode 323. And today, Jason and I want to respond to a question that we got here recently. And that question is, how does a husband love his wife when and in those situations where he has to say no? And of course, you know, this comes from a text of scripture like Ephesians chapter 5, where it says, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. To make her holy, cleansing her with the washing of water by the word. He did this to present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or anything like that, but holy and blameless. In the same way, husbands are to love their wives as their own body. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hates his own body, his own flesh, but provides and cares for it just as Christ does for the church. Since we are members of his body, for this reason a man will leave his father and mother, be joined to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So the Apostle Paul gave us that instruction. And of course, over in 1 Peter chapter 3, we understand that a husband is not only to love his wife, but part of loving his wife is to live with her in an understanding way. As Paul says in 1 Peter 3, verse 7, husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way of their weaker nature, yet showing them honor as co-heirs of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. And so, Jason, in the course of marriage, of course, you know, in an ideal and healthy marriage, a husband and wife, you know, have a discussion over things and hopefully, you know, come to the place together before the Lord where on most things, they're going to agree. But there are times certainly where, there isn't agreement and, the husband, as the one who is charged by the Lord as the spiritual leader of the home, has to maybe make a decision that's good for the family, maybe even the right decision over maybe emotion in a particular context. And yet, this question, I think, is really good, really helpful. How does a husband continue to love his wife in that particular situation where maybe there is an agreement? Jason, how would you, as a husband, I'm sure has had thought through some of these things. How should a husband begin approaching something like that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I love the practicality of the question, because every marriage is going to have to face times where, you know, husband and wife don't agree about certain things. Sometimes it's a big decision, and they have to come to a decision together. And other times there's going to be a, you know, a mounting pile of small decisions where, you know, either they weren't made in a biblical way, or they were done in a way that kind of ignored how the Bible lays out these God-given rules within the marriage and how a husband is called to be that servant leader. The wife is called to be that joyful follower. But together, they walk through life together. And it's a beautiful thing that marriage is not meant to be something that pits one against the other ever. Obviously, that's part of the picture of marriage, is this unity, this coming together. And so not only is that coming together being one flesh, it's coming together of two souls, two image bearers of God, and two minds. It's a meeting of the minds. And God has so wisely and perfectly crafted the female mind to have certain gifts and abilities and capacities that they're stronger in. And then there's certain gifts, capacities, and gifts and abilities that the male mind has that can. And so that's why we talk about these roles in marriage, It's not so that we can put in place a, you know, superficial hierarchy or whatever to make sure there's this, you know, things are streamlined and everything's efficient, and that's the whole point. No, the purpose is God has called husbands to be those leaders. Specific passages would be, you know, Ephesians 5, Colossians 3. Elsewhere, we see the same model being portrayed, but the husband is called the head of the wife. Now, how that works out in practicality, that's the real question that's being brought up here, because if there's a disagreement, how does a husband acknowledge not only that a wife brings her gifts and abilities to the table and he needs to acknowledge her, but also that he's being mindful of just the different factors at play in his decision making? And I think it's so important to remember that the enemy of every marriage is sin and selfishness, self-centeredness. And, you know, when we are living in the Spirit, when we are living by the Spirit and asking for the continual filling of God's Holy Spirit, that does so many things for us. First of all, we recognize that marriage is not ever meant to be about a power struggle. It's meant to be all about service, humility and service and love. And so the number one question isn't how do I get my way, although both sides are going to be motivated by selfishness on some level. It's good to acknowledge that in yourself. If you're the husband, to recognize, you know, even if God has given me the God-given role of leading, that doesn't mean that my first inclination or my first desire or what I would choose is the best one. And this is where, you know, maybe a very good example or, you know, concrete example would help here, but something along the lines of, okay, what about, should we, you know, how do we decide how we're going to do the holidays? For example, do we have a celebration with her side or his side? You know, how do we work that out? And I think that's just one that every married couple, virtually every married Christian couple has to deal with. And like, how are we going to do the holidays? How are we going to do times with family? You know, in my experience, my wife Whitney and I, we lived with my in-laws for 2 years, actually, early on in our marriage. So first year we were together in an apartment, and then almost two years after that, we lived with my in-laws. And then from then on out, we, you know, we lived in our own home. And I think that just giving that as a concrete example is helpful because, first of all, you know, you have to be able to talk well. You have to communicate well and seek to understand one another. And I think for that example, you'd want to be able to say, okay, look, what's a fair compromise that acknowledges, you know, what she wants to do? Maybe she's really wanting to spend time with her family in the holidays. And he's thinking, you know, a quiet, us getting away to the beach sounds a lot better, you know. That's how a lot of these go. You have to be able to recognize the desires and be able to acknowledge at least what the other person's thinking, and recognize that even in the context of Ephesians 5, while it does say, wives, submit to your husbands, before that it says submit to one another, and the whole idea there is not just a blanket, so everyone just submits and there's no leadership. No, but it does mean yielding to the fact that you're there to serve the other. And that's in the context, of course, of all believers. All believers are to be, in that sense, submitting to one another, loving one another, serving one another, making sacrifices, wanting the good of the other. And so when you approach that decision-making time with that is now your disposition. Your disposition is, I'm not wanting to just make decisions that benefit myself, which is what sin always wants to do, please myself, but I want to do what's right and best for both of us. And so it does fall to the husband to make that final decision. But I'll just be honest and say there have been so few times where in my marriage that I've had to say, you know, I need to basically say, you know, your suggestion, while good, is not what we're going to do. It seems like with every big decision that I can recall, we've basically come to that agreement, even if at the start we weren't in full agreement, or there was, you know, some things that need to be hashed out, like how's that going to play out and how can we meet each other where we're at and compromise where we should. So I've never, at least in my experience, had to, you know, pull out the trump card, so to speak, and say, I need to, you know, make a decision that goes directly against what you're wanting, but I think it's for the best of both of us. I just haven't had to do that. And I think that, you know, I think when a husband and wife are on the same page and communicating well, and this is something you have to work at, every married couple has to continually foster that relationship. You know, it's like tending a garden and recognizing the weeds that get in there, whether it be, you know, as more responsibilities come up, you know, the weeds of not getting enough time together. Quality time is so, so important. Because if you think about it, if the husband is, you know, just working like crazy, the couple's not really getting away for any outings or dates together, or, you know, just frankly being able to talk and pray together, as every married Christian couple should be doing those things consistently. If you're not doing that, then you're going to feel out of sync when you come to a big decision, and it's going to feel more like either he's trying to steamroll her and not listen completely to her side, or she's going to she's going to be accused of being unsubmissive and kind of rebelling against what he wants because she believes she has the, you know, the high ground or whatever. And, you know, the Bible speaks to husbands to be like Christ, you know, to love sacrificially. And so I think starting with that baseline is so important. But if there's maybe you have another example, just to make it more concrete for folks who are listening, that we don't want to keep this in the theoretical realm. Obviously, we want to make it as practical as possible.
Yeah, I don't know the specific like background context of the question. You know, in terms of what specific thing were they talking about? But yeah, I do think that's definitely one side of it for sure. Just the I think really, if I was to summarize what you were just saying, is to recognize the motivation. Like, am I not wanting to do this because I think it's, you know, it's a bad thing, I think it's a dangerous thing, or I think it's going to negatively impact family or children or that kind of thing? Or is it just, yeah, my flesh wants this other thing, and so I need to yield that for the good of my wife, because I am called to love her and serve her, and I think there is, you know, a natural give and take in healthy marriage as well, like you're talking about, where it's like she probably agrees to do things that maybe she's not interested in or that excited about just for your sake as well, you know. I imagine both of those scenarios are true. I was thinking through like scenarios in my head, like, I don't know if this is the point of the question, but like, what about a scenario where it's like, in relationship to raising children, in a way that is detrimental? Like, I'm thinking of, you know, it's usually a mom who maybe her adult son, gets babied, and is allowed to, you know, live in the home and play video games and not work or pursue, you know, what the Lord calls him to do as a man. And it's the mom who's saying, oh no, we gotta give him, you know, patience or that sort of thing. Whereas the husband's like, okay, I need to recognize that this is not good for the health of my child, right? I want him to be a godly man. I want him to pursue what the Lord has for him. And I'm going to have to step in and say, you know what? I know this feels mean, to push this kid out of the nest, you know, or push them to responsibility. But it's literally for their good before the Lord. You know, a situation like that, you know what I'm saying? I could see something like that coming up, and how would you approach something like that, in a way that's still honoring and loving to your wife?
Yeah. Well, mothers are very nurturing, and that's why we need them. they're vital. And I think that, you know, for the, I would just counsel a husband in that situation to, begin by acknowledging that, acknowledging her very important role as this man's mother. And, you know, he's a young man, so he's not as, obviously he's not as dependent on her as he once was, but he still benefits greatly from having a mom in his life who's in his corner and trying to look out for him. And, you know, that's an important role. And, you know, moms, it's interesting how we see this even in the Gospels, where moms will sometimes, out of love, I believe, assert themselves into a situation where maybe they just need to encourage their sons to take responsibility. Like James and John, for example, is the example that comes to mind. You know, it's their mom, apparently, that is wanting them to have these privileged places in the kingdom at his right hand and left hand. And although they may have been the ones that, you know, bring it up to Jesus, it, you know, based on Matthew and Mark, either way, the mom is involved, and we see that. And that tells me that, you know, especially because they get a mild rebuke from Jesus that, you know, this is not mine to give. This is the Father's to give. In other words, you need a lesson on servanthood and taking responsibility, I think, is kind of hidden in there, because you can't be a servant if you can't be serving others and be responsible if you're seeking privilege for yourself. And so, you know, the mom in this sense is also being rebuked for her misapplication of love, if you want to put it that way. But I think affirming her role as a mom and recognizing how amazing she is, how effective she has been in raising your son together, you know, Lord willing, it's hopefully been a relationship that's gone well for, you know, both parents. As they've raised this young man together, they have been on the same page. Hopefully, I think that starts very early, and those conversations need to be had. But how are we going to be, what are we going to be building our son up to be? And what do we want to see him become? And what does responsibility look like? It's not too early to start those conversations if you have a son. So even if he's a real little guy, be talking about, you know, not just how are we going to implement discipline, but also what is our parenting strategy and how are we going to instill work ethic and this sense of I need to be contributing to things outside myself and I need to be a responsible man. That needs to happen early on, because that way when he is that young man living at home, still hasn't moved out, still hasn't gotten a job, or for whatever reason. I mean, these kinds of things can happen for a number of reasons, and it's not always a bad reason. But being on that same page so that she's not blindsided and wondering, like, are we just kicking him to the curb? Well, no, we're wanting to help him. We're trying to set him up for success in life. We want him to see the value of hard work. And, you know, long term, we want him to be a responsible member of society. Maybe be a husband, a dad, all those things play into this. And if she's recognizing the purpose behind this, you know, strong push to get him out the door, I think if you talk through the reasons, and again, that relationship is going to be the foundation for all of it. if there's no relationship between the dad and the son, and say there is between the mom and the son, yeah, and in some sense, the dad doesn't really have a leg to stand on if he hasn't really poured into this man, and now he's coming along and saying, hey, we need to get him out of here. Well, that's coming from a place of very little responsibility himself. He hasn't modeled responsibility for that son. And so that is a, you know, that would bring in a different kind of conversation. You know, there need to be some repentance, some confession, things like that before having that conversation with the son. And at the same time, you know, her desire is for his best. And so even if she is saying it's best for him to stay home with us, you know, she might have a point in some circumstances. You never know. You know, maybe saving money for buying a house, or, you know, maybe he's at home for a season, but not forever, right? And I think having that kind of conversation on a case-by-case basis is where you'd want to begin. And assuming the best of everyone, you know, if a son is just run down by his dad, that's honestly one of the most defeating things. You can see this in a lot of young men. They feel run down by their dad, so they go to their mom, because the mom's the one who is encouraging and loving and nurturing, and so they almost avoid their dad because, oh, dad's just going to be disappointed because I got fired, or I flunked my math class, or, you know, whatever it might be. And so that's why the dad has to be reaffirming his love all the way. Again, the strength for the son has to be modeled by the dad. And so if there's strength and responsibility and that love for him, that unconditional love being shown to him, then you're going to be at a place where you can talk to him about these kinds of things that, you know, it just, you're going to have a basis for that. And so it's a good reminder for every dad.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And I like the comment you made about how, you know, sometimes the emotional thing is actually an important part of that discussion, because, you know, there are times where you say, no, we got to set emotion aside, right? And do the right thing. You know, too often, I think we do see women, especially women, I think men can do this as well, but primarily women will, you know, kind of get drawn into what are not necessarily biblical things, because of that great compassion for people, right? Not wanting anybody to suffer or struggle or feel pain, and wanting to step in and, you know, care and be compassionate. And there is a place for, I think, allowing some opportunity to fail or some opportunity for pain. You know, I think you see this in biblical instruction as it relates to sin. You know, somebody who's in open, unrepentant sin, the goal is to not comfort them. It's actually the opposite, to allow, you know, the pain of that, so that they become repentant, right? So it is a loving act, but it doesn't necessarily feel loving. And so there is time and space to say, hey, I understand this is how this feels, but this is not God's good, you know, in the life of our kid or whatever the situation is. But then, yeah, like Jason pointed out, there's also the times where it's like, well, I think we need to act on this right away. And in fact, we actually might need, you know, to go about it in a more compassionate way or a slower way. Certainly. And so there is, you know, vital balance in that, having those conversations and even being slow to make a decision. You know, when you come to a situation where, okay, there is this disagreement and it's not just a thing of selfishness, that there really is profound, disagreement factors based on, you know, whatever, whether that be logic versus emotion or whatever, to stop and say, okay, Lord, how do we navigate that? Or how should we navigate this situation? Instead of just trying to rush, you know, headlong into, okay, we got to make a decision and we got to make it now, you know, it could be And I know we practice this, you know, in the life of the church as elders, you know, when there is disagreement, or at least profound disagreement about something, the course of action is to always step back and say, you know what, we don't need to make a quick decision. We want to make a good and godly and wise decision. So we're all going to go back and pray about this some more. And more often than not, you know, the solution is something other than what either party originally had proposed or wanted, right? And when we come back together, it's like, you know what? My approach here was wrong. And the other person is saying mine was too. And then the Lord's guidance is something, you know, completely different. And so there seems to be good space or place for that. Let me ask the question, Jason, as a husband, how do you foster the conversations with your wife where these sort of things become natural discussions without like your wife feeling like you're just attacking her or disagreeing with her or causing her to feel unheard or unlistened to or unloved? How does a husband, you know, set the table well for building that open communication?
Yeah, well, this is something, I'll be honest, I'm still definitely working on. Because I think, you know, what your wife is going to be looking to you for is, you know, she wants the emotional fulfillment, not in the sense of what God alone can give, obviously, and that's an important aspect in all this too, is, you know, if you're looking to your spouse for the kind of fulfillment and satisfaction and whatever, you're not going to get it from your spouse if it's meant to be from God first. But out of the overflow of that, you can minister to your spouse. Husbands, I think listening is really a very important part of that relationship, and also not thinking that you have to be the problem solver. I think sometimes, you know, well-meaning Christian husbands might read the head of the household bit and they think, well, okay, so that means that I'm the guy who solves the problems. I'm Mr. Fix-It. I'm wearing the S on my chest and I get to, you know, I'm going to save the day. And a lot of times that's not what your wife needs. maybe most often even. And even though, you know, she wants to feel safe, she also wants to be heard. And I think sometimes it's not about, you know, saying, you know, well, here's the solution. It's more validating her feelings or what emotions she brings to the table and recognizing, you know, she needs to verbalize her concerns. And I think something that plays into this is, I've already mentioned praying together, also studying the Word together. And, you know, when you think of just how couples operate, generally speaking, you know, a husband who's got an idea in his head, like, this is what we're going to do, we're going to go on this vacation, you know, and if this happens, I think this can happen, a husband might be thinking sometimes, I want to surprise her, I want to buy tickets, and he doesn't consult her or even like hint that this is what he's wanting to do, and it kind of surprises her. Sometimes those surprises can backfire because you're trying to be romantic or whatever, and she's not ready for whatever it is you had planned. And that's partly because you weren't on the same page in other areas, and if you'd been listening to, you know, her stressors and recognizing there's things going on in her life that, you know, just up and going on a vacation right now, maybe isn't the best thing to do, but a quiet evening together would be, right? So, you know, this is something you have to work through. And also, I think there are some issues where Romans 14 issues is what we commonly call them, where it's not as though there's a clear biblical answer for what the right thing to do is. And this can come in with parenting your kids, where she maybe was raised a certain way and he was raised a different way, the husband and wife. So they approach parenting differently. And And they may have chapters and verses in their heads about this is why my position is right. Now, there may be some truth to that, but I would say you got to be very careful, because as a husband, what you never want to do is lead your wife into violating her conscience. This is a very important thing. And I think, obviously, consciences need to be formed and shaped by Scripture, by the Holy Spirit, by the community of believers you're a part of. All these factors come into play, but in any case, consciences aren't perfect, they're not infallible, but you still have to be very careful about that, because what you don't want to do is you don't want to dishonor her relationship with the Lord. And so she may have a very strong conviction about the right way to parent, or to keep it really basic, like maybe she has a strong conviction about, what kinds of sports your kids should be playing in, okay? And it differs from what he thinks. He's thinking, no, like we can do these sports, like definitely it's going to be good for them, it's going to build them up, they're going to be healthy and athletic. She may have a strong conviction that that's not the case. And even if, as a husband, you're so sure you're right, and you're so convinced this is, over the top, she's over the top with her, her concerns and safeties and all those kind of things, you might be right on one level, but on another level, she's seeing things from a different perspective, and she is feeling strongly enough to voice it to you. Don't ignore that. Don't downplay that or just be bent on, I need to change her mind. I would say, definitely, like you said, Jamie, be slow to make a decision in that case. But also, if it violates her conscience, that's going to be a problem. That is going to be a problem long term. And, going back to 1 Peter 3, she's a co-heir with you of the grace of life. And you don't want your prayers to be hindered. And so if you don't live with your wife in an understanding way, that means my way or the highway, or it could mean I need to change your mind about this because I'm right. You're not showing your honor as your wife, and so your prayers, that's a pretty big red flag warning, like that's the the fire alarm going off. That's red siren. Prayers being hindered, that's a big deal. So that means it's going to be hurting your relationship with the Lord, in addition to hurting her relationship with the Lord. And you don't want that. You don't want anything that would cause friction there. So all that to say is, be one who is always trying to understand your spouse better. And the husband is sometimes going to be making a decision not based on purely on what he thinks is best, but on what as a couple would be a fair and I'll just say a convictionally honest decision, so that they're both, neither one is violating their convictions or their conscience and saying, we can't do this. Which is why, if you think about it, why is there such a strong warning against being unequally yoked or marrying a wife outside the Lord, who's not in the Lord? Well, it comes down to this, like, convictions matter, and how you do life and parent and what you prioritize in life, all of that comes down to your beliefs. Is Jesus the ultimate head of your household, or is it my selfish desires? So if you're both in the Lord and you're committed to the Lord first, those decisions are going to be a lot, not easy, but they're going to be easier, because you're going to be on the same page and tracking together, rather than pointing to something that's, maybe culturally acceptable, but not biblically acceptable as your basis for making decisions.
I think that's really good. So kind of to summarize, as we're running out of podcast time here, it's a great topic. I'm sure we could go on a bunch of other, side tangents that relate to the general topic, conversation, or question. But basically, if I'm to summarize everything that you've shared, which I think has been great advice and hopefully good encouragement to any husbands out there listening, is to, in the pursuit of these situations, you know, love and serve your wife, take time for conversation and prayer together, hear her out, listen through it, ask yourself, is this a selfishness thing or is this a genuine before the Lord? Cause I think that's the question. You know, if you come to a place of, okay, I need to just make a decision here that's in opposition to what my wife thinks or feels, it really has to be something that before the Lord, I can confidently say, okay, Lord, you charged me with the spiritual care and welfare of my wife and kids. And so I made this decision out of that reasoning. And I will never look back on that and regret, you know, did I make the wrong decision? Because it's no, before the Lord, this was in their absolute best interest. Versus just, oh, is it selfishness in me? That's what the Lord calls me to lay down and sacrifice, for the good of my wife and kids. And then, yeah, pursue this, unity in relationship. Would you say, Jason, just in terms of a wrap up encouragement to a husband, if they instituted those principles in their marriage to a godly wife, then they would end up in a situation likely like yours where there isn't a lot of situations that go down with great opposition.
Yeah, I of course, I think that it's a huge thing if you're committed to the Lord first and as a couple committed to the Lord. I don't want to say any guarantees that there's not going to be any friction in your marriage at times. In fact, all even healthy marriages, all marriages will have disagreement at times. But I think when it comes down to those big decisions in life, I think if you implement these principles we're talking about, I think they are going to be the big difference maker. I will say one other thing, just because we're talking about decision making, there are a lot of times where Whitney is relieved that she's not the head of the home. In other words, she'll kind of look to me like, okay, it's your job, bub, you know, to make the decision here. Don't look at me in a sense of like, don't expect me to make the decision when it's your responsibility. And so I think there's also a freeing aspect we haven't really talked about yet, of good godly leadership. You know, obviously this would be maybe less momentous decisions where, you know, it's about like, where are we going to, I don't know, look for a new car or something like that. Like maybe she doesn't want to make certain decisions and she's looking for you to make, those decisions. And I guess, you know, if you have that understanding, that can be a really healthy thing too, because she's not, wanting to bear the burden of those decisions, and you as the husband, that's what it comes down to, is you're the responsible party at the end of the day. You're going to answer to God for how well you led and for the decisions you made in leading your family. So, yeah, commit to doing these things, but always seek to include her in the sense that don't rush into a decision, guns blazing, assuming you always have the right answer. You want to include her and make sure you're listening well, but also accept that responsibility as the leader to take that burden off of your wife and kids, and to, you know, as you're listening to wise counsel of others, you're going to be, and you're in the Word, you're going to be in a position where you're going to be filled with the Spirit, and you're going to be guided by God to be the godly husband and man that you're called to be. And that's an encouraging thing to remember that too.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to hear past episodes, you can find them on our website at faithunpacked.com. We'd also invite you to subscribe on your favorite podcasting site. If you have any questions, feel free to hit us up on social media, or you can send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. And we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.